This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, to help me understand the excitement, the upset, the threat of the recent announcement by the People's Republic of China, the PLA, that there was a test of a hypersonic missile, not only, but a hypersonic missile that orbited the Earth and then came to Earth in a glide pattern near to the target. Gregory, a very good evening to you. You take me in your most recent filing to the 20th century, the USSR, the unlamented, the 1960s, the Fractional Orbital Bombardment System, FOBS, especially the R-36O. What was it? What was its intention? And did the Soviets finish the matter or did they abandon it? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, the Fractional Orbital Bombardment System, which the Soviets built, tested, and deployed, was a remarkable creature involving hypersonic weapons, which would be launched from a heavy ballistic missile silo into generally a polar orbit with the warhead or the missile or the weapon component of the missile being able to skip down from low Earth orbit into the atmosphere and maneuver at hypersonic speeds towards its target. Now, the U.S. and the Soviet Union attempted to come to a political agreement as to how this would be contained or constrained. But frankly, it got to the point where it was difficult for the Soviets to sustain it, and the U.S. chose not to build a competing system, although the U.S. did have the technology at the time. The reality was that it was a weapon which was difficult at that time, or, you know, impossible with the systems available at the time, to defend against. And it enabled a weapon to be flown around the world and to strike a target at random, at will, with such maneuverability that it would be difficult to knock down. Well, the Soviets, again, a year or two ago, tested or claimed to have tested such a system. And then the People's Republic of China, the People's Liberation Army Rocket Force, did so again just recently with one of their own, clearly taking the 1960s technology from the Soviet Union. And the interesting thing was that the PLA and the Communist Party of China did not actually claim to have performed this demonstration flight. In fact, they denied that it was a fractional orbital bombardment system at all, or a weapon of any description, or a hypersonic, but that's what it was. And it certainly alarmed a lot of people in Washington. Not that the U.S. couldn't match it. They would need, though, to throw some money at it, and there are reasons why they are not throwing money at this kind of weapon system at this time.
Just a detail here before we turn to the larger picture that you've identified. The Chinese demonstration came right prior to COP26, the gathering of eagles and doves in Glasgow, Scotland, to discuss the fate of the planet. It also came after a long series of provocative remarks directed at the U.S. and also at Liz Truss of the United Kingdom for making unambiguous remarks about Chinese bad acting these years to do with human rights and other depredations. And then the test came with the news that Xi Jinping would not be attending Glasgow. Was this meant to be an intimidation, or is it just coincidence that they tested just at the moment when there was drums along the Taiwan Strait?
No, I think the test was something that they needed to get into place, and they still want to make sure that they've perfected it before they actually declare it as a threat. But there are reasons why they don't want to test it, demonstrate it as a threat at this stage, because they still hope to drive U.S. defense spending into other weapons programs, which would be less of a threat to the People's Republic of China. And the reason that she didn't attend Glasgow was not so much that he was showing his displeasure and thumbing his nose at the West or Liz Truss for her commendable comments, but rather this is no time for Xi to be out of Beijing. His position is extremely tenuous. He is now fighting with all of his subtle and unsubtle tools to make sure that at the next party congress in October 2022, that he is re-elected for a third term, an unprecedented third term, as General Secretary of the Communist Party of China. He has many adversaries, and of course, he is facing the implosion of the People's Republic of China's economy, some of which now is, if you like, a controlled implosion, because the PRC can no longer sustain its economic or strategic position. It can't afford to fund the Belt and Road Initiative, and the economy is declining. And if Xi Jinping is to stay in power and the Communist Party of China is to retain control over mainland China, then they have to control this implosion. They have to stop all of the opposition from the market sector, if you like, from the private sector. And so basically, Xi is pulling back everything under state control in a super Maoist fashion. So we'll see the contraction, if you like, of the PRC, not to a hermit kingdom, but to a much more controllable one in which the private sector will no longer give it the great wealth which it temporarily enjoyed. The period of PRC wealth is over, but they're still hoping to get that checkmate weapon system out there, such as their fractional orbital bombardment system and other weapon systems, so that they can deter any attempts to, if you like, weaken or shatter the PRC. So the key for Xi to stay in power is to keep demonstrating great strength in the military and international section, to thumb his nose at the rest of the world, and yet to secretly manage this implosion.
You report that the Air Force is en route to Minuteman III system, very expensive, ICBM replacement. You report that the Air Force is on the way for Northrop Grumman's B-21 Raider, the next level of strategic bomber. You also report that the U.S. has a hypersonic missile program. I note that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Milley, commented that the hypersonic missile test from China might be a Sputnik moment. All those programs are enormously expensive. You point to those programs suiting the PRC's purpose right now. How does this connect to the silos that were recently revealed being built in Western China?
Well, there are three major areas where it appears that new ICBM silos are being built by the People's Liberation Army Rocket Force, particularly in the northwest of the Chinese continent, Chinese mainland. The question is, are these real missile silos or are they Potemkin silos? In other words, pretend silos like a Western movie set. The reality is that the People's Republic of China has limited funds to put into its defense planning, and it's throwing it into some very effective systems like that fractional orbital system. So why would they build new underground missile silos which are extremely vulnerable to strike by the United States? They have also built these silos, or they're building these silos, close together, which means that they are vulnerable to a first strike from the United States. In other words, if you detonated a nuclear weapon over or near one of those silos, then several others would also be damaged and rendered out of service. So the first thing that this tells you is that the Chinese want to portray the image that these silos are meant for a Chinese first strike. In other words, they want to get the missiles out of those silos before the U.S. responds. So that makes them very provocative and makes the United States think that it's got to build up its ICBM threat, counter threat of its own, which means that modernization of the Minuteman III missiles of the United States and the total overhaul of U.S. nuclear weapons. Now, the Minuteman III replacement programs a couple of years ago was already costing $100 billion and is going to go many times that. The nuclear weapons replacement program is costing out at $1.2 trillion. And this is at a time when nuclear weapons themselves, in the strategic sense, are far less important. China is putting its main strategic weapons into the forefront as cyber weapons and, to a degree, if you're using kinetic weapons, in the hypersonics, in the like the fractional orbital bombardment system. The Minuteman III replacement is 20th century. Heavy nuclear weapons are 20th century. This is not going to win you any wars. It's not going to even deter a war at this stage. So from China's point of view, they would like to see the Minuteman III replacement program go ahead and the B-21 Raider manned bomber go ahead and the U.S. Nuclear weapons replacement program go ahead, because this is not going to be the threat to China that a U.S. hypersonic system would be, or a U.S. cyber weapon system would be.
The PRC then is practicing deception in order to beggar the DOD's budget for all these large weapon systems. The DOD is preparing for a war that China does not intend to fight. Is that how to regard this?
Absolutely correct. But many defense officials in the United States are so heavily invested in this nuclear, modernizing yesterday's weapons, that they don't want to hear this news. They want to believe that these are not Potemkin silos, but the real thing. And that's where they should be focusing their attention. And to my mind, and to our organization, International Strategic Studies, we think this is literally being dragged down the wrong rabbit hole.
You connect to what happened during the 1980s and the Reagan administration's Star Wars. How do those two historical moments compare, and what do we learn from them, Gregory?
Well, the interesting thing is that when Strategic Defense Initiative by Ronald Reagan and Dr. Stephen Passoni really started to prove that it was viable, the Soviets marshaled all of their assets to kill that. And in fact, here's the irony, they marshaled their anti-nuclear lobby, the nuclear ban people, to attack the Strategic Defense Initiative, saying that it would actually rob the world of the parity between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, because it could destroy any missiles that were ballistic missiles at apogee as they went out of the atmosphere. They used some assets in this country, such as the Federation of American Scientists and others, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. These were both heavily used to kill off SDI. Now, as it turned out, the Soviet Union collapsed, and so we had George H.W. Bush come to office, and he just canceled them because he felt that SDI was no longer needed. But the reality was that the Federation of American Scientists and the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists were major weapons in the Soviet arsenal to kill SDI, and they are now being the major instruments being used to promote the idea that the Chinese missile silos are going to be a major threat to the United States. So it's interesting that they have come back to life in that guise.
So the Chinese are turning the tables. They're taking what happened in the 1980s. The way it was explained to me, Gregory, is that the Soviet Union couldn't afford to keep up. Is that inaccurate, reflecting back 40 years ago?
100% correct.
And can we afford to keep up to a threat that isn't real? I mean, that is the puzzle you're proposing.
Absolutely. Well, in the Cold War, the Soviets could not keep up with a very, very real threat. The nuclear gambit was being taken off the table by Ronald Reagan. Today, we have the Chinese attempting to raise the specter of a phony threat so that the U.S. will spend all of its available defense capital in the wrong direction.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, just back from Central Asia. And when we come back, the election in Uzbekistan. What did we learn? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.